the Rugby Union Podcast.
Welcome to William Hill's Rugby Union Podcast. It is November, and that means Autumn Internationals. I'm Michael Casey, and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by a man that's pulled on the red rose and pat down for England more than just a few times, Jeff Probyn. Jeff, how are you, sir? Looking forward to the weekend's games?
I am indeed, Michael. It's going to be some great rugby, actually. This is probably the last chance for a few guys to cement their place in the World Cup squads for all sides, really, for New Zealand, for England, and for obviously Scotland, Ireland, and that. There's injuries galore, so for lots of players, this is their one opportunity to really get their name on the team sheet.
Yeah, I mean, the Autumn Internationals always serve as a good yardstick, I guess, for us in the Northern Hemisphere, exactly where we are against the Southern Hemisphere talents, usually ahead of the Six Nations, but as you say, this year it's got the added impetus with the World Cup here in England next year.
Yes, and you know, as much as there's normally a certain amount of experimentation with the Autumn Internationals, because both sides, both the Southern Hemisphere and our teams, try out new players. As we get closer to the World Cup, that tends not to happen so much, but we've been forced into a situation, certainly with England, where we've had so many injuries in our centres that we're trying a completely new partnership. You look at the New Zealanders, they've got Sonny Boy Williams back, and that's a major coup for them. He's starting his first game for them since coming back. And all in all, there's still a certain amount of experimentation. We've got Vern Cotter taking over Scotland with their game against Argentina. It's a big game for him. And of course, you've got Ireland playing their first real series without Bod. That means that they're under challenge, their centre combinations, how they work out, how they don't work out, whether it's going to be good going forward. There's so many elements of challenge and change with what's going on. Wales, the same problem. They've had injury problems in their centres. They've had to put George North into the centre. There's still a lot up in the air, and it's going to be some really exciting games.
Certainly is, and you've referenced plenty of the chopping and changing about a lot of the sides. Let's jump into the game at Twickenham. Let's go there first. England versus New Zealand. New Zealand coming in. Well, you know, they've proved they're not completely unbeatable in their championship tournament, but they're pretty close to it. One man I want to talk about before we get stuck into the ABs and quite how good they are, I want to talk about England and this change side that Stuart Lancaster has named. And one name in particular at first, and that's Semenya Rokodogune, who I've heard pronounced in all sorts of different ways in the news this week. He starts in the 14 jersey for England, having made a pretty imperious start to the Premiership campaign with Bath, Jeff.
Yeah, what an outstanding player. I think we all call him Rocky, actually, is
the simplest
way to describe it. Yeah, you try and pronounce all these names. But he's had an incredible career with the Army. I mean, he played for the Army for a number of years, played in the Sevens side for the Army. He's been around the scene for a long, long time, but he never made himself available. Since he's got into club rugby with Bath, he's still a sergeant or a corporal in the Army at the moment. So, he's not given up his day job for his rugby, and in that sense he's probably the only amateur still who's going to be playing international rugby. But he's an outstanding player. He's incredibly quick, incredibly like all Islanders. He is a Fijian. Like all Islanders, he's very, very strong, very muscular. He's quick. He's got good eye hand coordination. He's a very, very, very good rugby player on top of everything else, as well as having physicality. His defence is good. Sometimes with wingers, you don't have the defensive thing. It's been a criticism of Chris Ashton. One of the reasons he's been left out is because of his defence. And this is what's given Rocky his chance. This is a big, big game for him. And I'm pretty sure he's going to be pretty explosive.
Yeah, professional rugby these days becomes more and more about stats. And I mean, statistically, Rokodogune this season, with regards to tackles made and completed, meters made and defenders beaten, as well as his try scoring record, it is pretty superb and has justified his selection by England. We'll just run through this England team then, Jeff. Mike Brown starting at fullback, Semenya Rokodogune on one wing with Brad Barrett and Carl Eastman in the centre. It's Gloucester's Johnny May on the other wing, halfbacks of Danny Kerr and Owen Farrell. Up front, we've got Joe Marler, Dylan Hartley, and Dave David Wilson as front row. It's Courtney Laws and David Atwood in the second row, and a back row of Tom Wood, Captain Chris Robshaw and Billy Vunipola. It's not a bad starting lineup, Jeff, but it's going to have to be very, very good on Saturday.
It's going to have to be very, very good. It isn't a bad lineup. You know, there's some of these players are good players. And I mean, the England player, it's a very, very consistent side. And when you look at Lancaster's selections, he has been consistent. These boys have all been in the squad. They've all been tried. They've all been tested. The big thing is that we know that he's going to be second choice props. We know that if he had Dan Cole and Corvisario, they'd be playing. But it's a big chance for Dave Wilson to really establish himself. Joe Marler's been a substitute for Corvisario now for so long that he's actually earned the right to be your first choice loose head prop. He's more consistent. He's on the field longer. Dylan Hartley's back in at that hooker slot. He's managed to keep Weber out the side. That's a good thing. It's a good thing if Hartley concentrates on his game and keeps his mouth closed. He's a far better player. So I'm pretty sure that's what Lancaster's told him. Big loss for England, I think, is Joe Launchbury. He's such a talented young man, and his combination with Courtney Laws has been working very, very well for England. Dave Atwood's great as a substitute going in there, but it would have been nice to have had Joe Launchbury for this game particularly. In the backs, the centres are the problem. Barrett's been in and out the England team. He's come back in. He's known for his solid defence. They've put him on the outside centre, which is interesting because that means he'll be marking Comrade Smith in the South African side, whereas I would expect that the danger is going to actually be Sonny Boy Williams, who's playing inside centre opposite Eastman.
Two former rugby league lads going head-to-head there, isn't there?
It is, but it's also a fact that Eastman got taken off in the summer tour because his defence wasn't quite good enough. He got taken off at half-time in the second test, I think it was, on the summer tour, and substituted out of the game, didn't play the final game. So, you know, Eastman, for him, it's a big, big game. It's his chance to really pay back the... if you like, what the trust that Lancaster has put into him. So in that sense, we need a big game from Eastwood because Sonny Boy Williams is definitely one of the strike runners, one of the major, major strike runners on New Zealand. And there'll be a lot of plays coming off him. And if that tackle area is weak at all, then you can expect a lot of fireworks and you can expect that New Zealand will exploit that area. They will remember what happened in that test where Eastman had to be substituted and they will target him early on.
Yeah, and talking about the All Black side, I'm just looking through it here. The experience just stands out. There are 1,029 test caps between the squads there with an average age of 27. You know, that is experience that most international outfits could only dream of. Israel Dagg at fullback, Ben Smith, Conrad Smith, who you mentioned, will start at 13. Sonny Bill Williams, headline grabber, he will start at 12. Julian Surveyor, who with the more and more impressive performances he puts in, the more and more he's compared to Jonah Lomo and other greats who've played on the wing before in the All Black jersey. They drop Dan Carter. They can bring in Aaron Cruder at 10. It's there's not many international outfits or any outfits that could be able to bring in Aaron Cruder at second choice fly half and still have someone in the form of Beauden Barrett on the bench. And then it's Aaron Smith at 9. And then you just look at the forwards. It's Owen Franks, Dan Coles. I'm reading that one backwards. Wyatt Crockett, Dane Coles, and Owen Franks front row. Sam Whitelock and Brodie Retallack second row. And then the back row, which for me is the real difference maker for New Zealand, of Jerome Kano, Richie McCaw, and Kieran Reid. It is just superb, Jeff, isn't it?
Well, it is. Although their front row is still a new front row. So Woodcock's been dropped for them. So there's an area for England. Tony Woodcock's been dropped from the New Zealand side. They're big, experienced loose head. So from that point of view, it's if you like, an inexperienced front row by New Zealand standards by taking Woodcock out. So from that point of view, it's an area where England can exploit. But as you say, their back row, Richie McCaw hasn't been playing his best rugby lately. He needs to up his game. They left him out of that thrashing of America last week. And, you know, he's been on the bench. He's been safe for this game. So it's a big, big clash between the two captains, Robshaw and McCall. It's going to be an exciting game. Sadly, I have to say that I don't think England will win it. But it'll be the manner in which they lose it, which I think will define the game. If that makes sense, I think it's going to be. This New Zealand team, as you say, are so experienced now. They're playing so well together. The addition of Sonny Boy Williams coming into that midfield, their back line is outstanding. And, you know, with ours, Owen Farrell's just recovering from injury. He's only played one game of rugby. He's starting an international against the best team, one of the best teams in the world. We've had the disruption in our midfield. It's a new midfield pairing who haven't played together before. We've got a new cap on one wing. We've got a guy with only two or three caps on the other wing. Yes, we've got Mike Brown, probably one of the best fullbacks in the world, certainly up there with Israel Dagg and Israel Folau as well. So we've got that thing there. But I think that New Zealand have just got that little bit too much for England this one. To be honest, I expected that New Zealand will win by about 10 points, 10 or 15 points.
Fair enough. I think you could well be right as well. With the betting in England, a 9-4 outside as a draw 21. You're not getting much of a price about New Zealand at 1-3, but they go far shorter against other opposition. Mm. The handicap's interesting. Is 8 points, Jeff. So by your estimations, New Zealand will cover that. They should win by 10-15, so they cover a minus 8-point handicap. It's 10-11 each of two on the handicaps. Winning margin line are a market whereby you're sometimes offered a little bit more value about correcting the correct margin of victory. If we're thinking of a New Zealand by 10 to 15 points, then Jeff, you can see New Zealand by 11 to 15 is 5-1, or by 6 to 10 points is 9-2. So that the sort
I
of
think that's a good bet.
You could perhaps, you know, the big enough prices to split your stakes across the two and still be in profits if it's between 6 and 15 points. We do also occasionally offer the 1 to 12 markets and subsequently 12 to 40, 24 points winning market lives. So keep your eye out for those. If I was to press you for any potential try scorers from either side, Jeff, markets and prices will become available on these in the next couple of days. Whereabouts would you go as a potential try scorer?
You've got to look at Israel. You've got to look at Israel Dagg, obviously. You've got to look at Surveyor as well on the wing coming. The thing about Sonny Boy Williams is not so much that he will score tries, but if he breaks tackles, he draws in defenders and he creates space for the runners off. So Conrad Smith, obviously, you're looking at that as well. You're looking for the players around him, and any one of the back three is someone to put a bet on, really.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And you know what? I'm going to go with Rocco de Gunni as a chance for England because I've been that impressed with him. I'm hoping that he gets some of the service to the outside and we see him replicate some of his domestic form on the big stage.
From an England point of view, Michael, you know, if you're talking about try scorers from England, then, you know, Mike Brown's got to be up there as well. He's going to be, you've got to be looked at. Danny Kerr. Yeah, there is going to be a hell of a forward battle going on, and there will be areas around that area. And the way that Danny Kerr plays, that sniping little run of his and those moves like that, he has got good pace off the mark. If there's half a space and, you know, with the two sets of forwards battling each other, there just might be that little hole for him to sneak through.
Yeah, we've seen him do it for Harlequins already this season, time and time again. He is dangerous around the base of the ruck. Anyway, we must move on and to the second of Saturday's 2:30 kickoffs, and it's another one. And to be fair, with regards to the betting, this looks like it's going to be the closest of the games of the weekend. But unfortunately for Wales, they're taking on Australia. They have such a wretched record against the Australians, even where, you know, when they're winning Grand Slams and dominating all the Northern Hemisphere, they just don't seem to be able to do it against the Southern Hemisphere opposition, Jeff. Wales are 13-10 for victory at the Millennium Stadium on Saturday. Australia 8-13 favourites. A handicap is 3 points in the betting. How do you see the Welsh getting on?
Well, to be honest, I hate to say this, but I think they'll win.
Heck. Well, there we go.
As an Englishman, I hate to say it. But, you know, I really do. I think that there's Australia are in such a mess, losing McKenzie, all the aspects of all the rows, all the fuss that's been going on. They did well against the Barbars last week, but that's not a real game. No one's playing proper rugby.
Yeah, and I mean, I know it's a Barbar's game, but the defence still looked pretty porous last weekend.
Well, they did, and they—I mean, it was, if you like, against a team that's not got the experience and the strike runners who play regularly together with each other and know each other. They struggled, and they were, should we say, relieved to be able to kick the ball off at the end when they had points in front. I don't think Wales will give them that opportunity. Wales will be a much more controlled team. Even though they've had their injuries, even though they've got their problems, this is still very much a Welsh side that is, if you like, cast in knowing each other. There's a lot of players that have played together, even moving North into the centre. What a centre pairing, Jamie Roberts and George North. Bloody hell, they're enormous.
I was going to say, you'd quickly get tired of tackling them too afternoon, wouldn't you, Jeff?
Well, you would do. And, you know, they create space for Cuthbert, who, well, is such a great finisher. Lee Halfpenny, you know, he's starting playing a few games now for Toulon. He hasn't been playing much, but he's been playing. His goal kicking is going to be vital to the Welsh. You know, my only aspects with the Welsh is they've taken a slight gamble by leaving out Adam Jones. Adam Jones would have guaranteed them a stable and solid dominant scrum. By leaving him out, they're taking a chance that the Australian scrum isn't that good. And to be honest, the Australian scrum isn't that good. So I don't think it'll make that much difference. But it does mean that this Welsh side do have the chance, really, to break the mould and actually win this game against Australia, and I think they will. I think they'll win it quite comfortably as well. I think they'll actually win by about 10 points.
Wow, that is a very bold prediction there. So as we mentioned, Wales 13-10 on their handicaps. They're given a 3-point head start. So by the handicaps here, we don't actually offer markets taking points off the Welsh here. You can look at first half and second half handicaps, but Wales on the outrights 13-10. Of course, we've got the winning margin lives that we talked about for the England game. Wales to win it by, say, 6-10 points, Jeff, perhaps 7-1. Would that be a price? Or even if you want to get a little bit bolder, win it by 11-15 points at 10-1 against this Australian side, which, I mean, they're not short on flair. Look at the back line: Israel Folau, Adam Ashley Cooper, Tavita Kuidrani. But it's up front where the problems are, isn't it?
It's up front where the problems are. It's also they're not playing with confidence. A new coach comes in, he's changing the style slightly. McKenzie had to work incredibly hard to build the Australian squad that he did. And all right, he's had his problems at the end with Curly Bill and guys like that. But the reality was he took over what was a bad state in Australian rugby and turned it round. And then because of the politics now and what's been going on in Australia, he's had to move out, and we've got a new coach in there whose name I could never say, but Cheik or something like that. he's taken over as coach, and the whole thing is that he's only just taken over as coach, so he's having to literally work with the players that McKenzie had chosen to play in specific roles, and he's trying to change that game, and that could and will disrupt the Australian side. I would be brave and say go for the 11-15, but I'd stick at the certain with the 10 points, to be honest.
6-10
in favour of Wales. Australia do defend well, but I think the Wales have got some of the attack runners and the strike runners to really question this Australian side. And as I say, their lack of confidence at the moment. They haven't been playing good rugby. The Barbars game was just an exhibition where everyone throws the ball around. I've got to say, I believe that a tight test match, I think Wales will win it, and especially at the Millennium. Sam Warburton's going to be as keen as mustard to go into this game and produce a game. And I think that it's a game that Wales will win.
Yeah, that is massive. I mean, Warburton was one of four influential players that Wales didn't have when they toured the summer in South Africa. Obviously him, no Leif Halfpenny, no Richard Hibbard, no Reece Webb either, all out for through injury. Wales as a double result might be another one that interests you, Jeff. That's for them to be leading at half time and full time at 9-4, in addition to the 6-10 point winning margin live that you mentioned at 7-1. Again, it's one of my favourite markets, and it'll pop live soon. Is there any particular picks for try scorers from either side?
Well, you've got to look at Cuthbert, I think, for the Welsh. If I'm looking at the Australian side, it's Folau. He's such a player, as far as I'm concerned. I think Spate's good, and Cooper is good as well. But they might be bets for the Australian side, but I think Cuthbert will be the Welshman who scores.
Yeah, he is a prolific striker on the international scene, so Alex Cuthbert, one to watch as a potential try scorer. At quarter five, there's one of the games that is, well, we've gone from arguably the most closely contested, at least in a betting perspective, to the least closely contested, and this is France versus Fiji. France at home are 1-50 to take on the Islanders, Fiji at 12-1. I mean, for Fiji, it's an interesting one. You look at the squad, and there's various talents in there that people who watch Premiership rugby will recognise, and they get the odd result. You know, wins over Italy in the summer. They beat Tonga convincingly in the Pacific Nations Cup. Lost out narrowly to Samoa. I mean, I'm looking down the side that they've picked today. There's plenty of household names for those who are familiar with the Premiership rugby. I'm looking at Campisi, Mafu for one, Captain Akapusi Kera, Nico Matawalu, who's been so good for Glasgow over the last couple of years. You know, there's the odd talent, but I mean, surely this is going to be a pretty one-sided French win. France, by the way, have a couple of debutants in the side. South African-born Scott Spedding will start at fullback. I think there's an injury to Bryce Doulan in their ranks. And also Alexandre Dumoulin is starting at 13, having made a decent start for Racing Metro this top 14 season. Is it as one-sided as the betty suggests, Jeff? France at 1-50, minus 27 points in the handicap, or do you see any sort of surprise in this one?
Well, to be honest with you, despite the fact that France have been having a nightmare time under Philippe Saint-André, this will be a one-sided match. I expect France to win it comfortably. I expect they'll be closer to 40 points rather than 27. Fiji are great individual players. It's the team side of their game that lets them down, and in the fierce atmosphere of the Stade de France, with the French team baying for blood and needing to prove a point. There's been an awful lot written and spoken about the French side over the past couple of months. There's been all sorts of rows between Saint-André and former French coaches, all going on in the French press. He needs a good game. He's picked a squad of strong players. He's not really putting a second team out. He knows that later in this autumn he's got some big games. So, yes, I expect this to be a one-sided game. I expect Fiji to produce the odd try, but I still expect France to dominate it and win quite comfortably.
Yeah, I completely agree. As you said, the handicap there at 27 points, minus 27 at 10 to 11 makes sense. You know, there are other markets available. Perhaps look at playing overs on the points, perhaps, in the game. Winning margin lives, we have a variety. I guess it's quite hard to kind of stick a particular sort of number on it, Jeff. It's just kind of as many as France want to, from your assessment, and I'd be in agreement.
Yeah, it's kind of, you've got to look at it as being a similar game to the All Blacks versus America. All right, Fiji is slightly better than America, and France is slightly worse than the All Blacks. But the American game was play. It was a big game for the Americans. It was their cup final, their World Cup final, and they still lost 74-6. You know, for Fiji, this is not a World Cup final. This is a game that they're going to be playing on a tour, preparing for next year's World Cup that they're going to be in. They know they're going to be competing against first-class sides. They'll want to have a good game, but quite frankly, I think more of Fijian players are looking for contracts with top 14 clubs and the Premiership than they are in terms of the interests of Fiji, the Fijian nation.
Fair enough then. Let's move on to something that we think might be a bit more competitive, or at least if you've got any sort of Irish roots, you'll be hoping so. Ireland host South Africa at the Aviva. They're 2-1 for victory, and South Africa are 4-11. Of course, South Africa registered the only defeat inflicted on New Zealand in the Rugby Championship just a few weeks ago. But at that point, New Zealand had already pretty much wrapped up the tournament, and I think eyes were focused on the Bledisloe Cup and the week that followed. How do you rate Ireland's chances? Their team looks strong, but you referenced it about the very start of this recording, Jeff. No Brian O'Driscoll, and a very much changed centre pairing for Ireland. It's Jared Payne and Robbie Henshaw, Ulsterman, that are starting in midfield for Ireland. Around a side that's pretty settled, I guess, as a whole, apart from this midfield pairing, but given it's such a influential position on the pitch, how do you think they'll cope?
Well, that's the key. We don't know. They're playing well together as a club side. They've played some good rugby they've been recommended by the outgoing centre, so to speak. You look at it and they've Gordon Darcy, we were all expecting Gordon Darcy to be in this side. Obviously, we're losing Brian O'Driscoll to retirement is a big loss for the Irish side. You expected that they'd carry on with Darcy in that midfield, so to give a bit of, if you like, a bit of continuity. Throwing in two new centres is a big challenge against a South Africa side that is starting to play some very good rugby. I expect the forward battle to be evens. I expect the South African backs to just shade it. I see this being a South Africa win by a lot of points, though, by about seven. Okay, yeah, between seven and ten.
You should set these handicap, Jeff. So they're there at six, so it's around about the same. So Ireland plus 6-10 to 11, South Africa minus 6-10 to 11. So maybe just shading with the Springboks there, just perhaps on the handicap, the 4-11 on the outrights.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that that South African side with Leroux, with de Villiers, with Habana. You know, they've got so many good finishers in that side. Big solid pack up front. It's going to be one hell of a battle. Paul O'Connell, captain in the Irish side, always leads to the front. They've got a good back row in Henry Heaslip and Omani. It's a difficult one. Sexton's been playing decent sort of rugby, not been playing his best rugby, always saves his best rugby for when he plays for Ireland, so we can expect Sexton to have a good game. It's going to be a close game, but I think that South Africa will just have the odds, and that's why I say it will be close, but I think that, you know, as we say, one to 7 points is where I see the scores.
Okay, we can get the 1-5 at 4-1 for South Africa to win, 6-10 at 9-2. So perhaps something to look at there. You mentioned Johnny Sexton and his form at the moment. He's opposite a guy called Andrew Pollard on a Saturday evening, and he's a player who's impressed me no end in the Rugby Championship. I think he's one to watch, not only with how he runs a game, but how he actually runs the ball in hand. You know, he scored tries against New Zealand, of course, just a couple of weeks ago, and I think he'll be one to watch potentially as a try scorer on Saturday. We move on, and the final game of the of Saturday, and it's Scotland versus Argentina, and this is a. It'll be an interesting one. I think this is going to be a very, very acute assessment of where Scotland are. And at 11-10, Jeff, do you think they're a little bit big against Argentina, 8-11, or do you maybe not give them such a optimistic outlook as I do?
Yeah, well, I think this is not a bad Scotland side, because you know it's his first major home game. He's put the Gray brothers in at second row. He's got Ewan Murray back in the front row, so you know he's gone for solidity and making and putting in a big pack. Stuart Hogg in the backs obviously is regarded by almost everyone as one of the world class players, even though he's playing in what is a pretty average Scotland side. The Argentinians recorded their first win in the championship over the shades of Australia, you know, so in that sense, it's a big game for Scotland, but it shouldn't be a big game for Scotland. This is Argentina who struggle because all their players are stolen by France and other places, and getting them back together. I think Scotland will win. I think it will be maybe 10 to 15 points in Scotland's favour. So I think it will be an easy win for Scotland.
Oh, fair enough. Well, then there's some markets to be available there. They're 11-10 on the outrights. If you fancy Scotland winning margin live, which we've talked about quite a bit, you can look at Scotland by 1-5, 9-2 in the betting. 6-10 points is 6-1. For me, one thing that Scotland can hang on to and hopefully build on is the fact that, you know, Glasgow are going so well, and there's such a strong nucleus of the side who are playing in that Glasgow Warriors side at the moment, and that's something that, as you mentioned, Argentina can't could only wish for, to have such a strong core of their players playing domestic rugby week in, week out. I'll push you for an anytime try scorer from either side, Jeff, but for me, I think Alex Dunbar is one to look at. Any for you that might stand out as potential ones to crash the whitewash on Saturday?
Well, Dunbar is good, he's quick. Lamotte is obviously got to be looked at, and obviously Hogg. I go for hug.
Brilliant, Jeff. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to speaking to you as these series progress, and hopefully we'll be landing some winning bets come Saturday evening.
Yeah, well, hopefully this week I reckon it's going to be two each, you know, two of us homeboys winning and two of the away teams winning the major games. So I hope that in the weeks to come we can say there'll be more home teams winning.
Fingers crossed. Jeff, thank you very much.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.